years, as long as I've got my plastic Jesus riding on the dashboard of my car. My trials and tribulations and my troubles through the nations, with my plastic Jesus I'll go far.
Oh, plastic Jesus, plastic Jesus, riding on the dashboard of my car. Well, I'm afraid he'll have to go. His magnets ruin my radio. If I have a wreck, it'll leave a scar.
That's from the original 45. You can hear the scratches on that thing. That goes way back to 72. I remember old Carl Strait. Some of you people out there still may remember the famous Carl Strait. Morris Dees was petrified of Carl Strait. I've seen that Dees get so scared of Carl Strait that he wouldn't get out of his car until Carl Strait went in the building. Carl Strait was a hard drinking, hard fighting, hard gambling type of guy. He stood over 6 foot tall, and he was the toughest street fighter I think I've ever known. Reuben and the JDL were deathly afraid of him. I've seen him lay out guys with one punch on the street. And he traveled with me to some of the big TV shows and other appearances through the 80s. He was always around, and I'm telling you, you always felt safe with Carl Strait around. He was known throughout the movement as Bone Crusher. I've even got a big glass goblet that'll hold about two or three beers, and it's etched on the outside, Bone Crusher. He liked to gamble. He liked to Texas Hold'em. Liked to drink, gamble, and fight, and laugh and smile. He was always laughing, always joking. Yeah. And he's the one who introduced me to that Plastic Jesus song. We have a couple of beers going down the highway singing that song. I don't care if it rains off phrases, as long as I got my Plastic Jesus on the dashboard of my car. Yep. I remember one time a couple of FBI agents come up to us and they flashed their badges, and Carl said to the one, he said, "Where'd you get that, Toys R Us?" You know, that reminds me, I used to know a guy in the beach area of Southern California. Really nice guy. Nice guy, handsome guy. Women liked him. He started a little group called Water, W-A-T-E-R, and I forget exactly what that stood for, but it had to do with the white race. And he became so disillusioned over the dropping appearance and the beauty among white people that it's hard to believe, but he committed suicide because of it. He wrote a letter about it before he committed suicide. He hated to see the white race deteriorating physically and in beauty and so forth as it was. He couldn't take it anymore. So that's pretty extreme. But when I look around the country and see a cross-section of the whites in this country, he would have probably committed suicide much earlier if he'd see the things the way they are now. Well, let's get the show on the road. This is Terrible Tommy in the bunker right here on a Saturn's Day, a beautiful day here in north central Indiana. And it is the 3rd of May, and I guess those April showers are bringing on May flowers, because I'm telling you, this grass is growing faster than, I can't believe it. People are all out there mowing their yard already. And a week or two ago, you could hardly see any grass. I'm telling you. Well, let's see here. I got a little clip. Let me play this for you.
Hello. I think that you should talk about the topic of that dirty nigger, Snoop Dogg, coming back at the Clippers owner, and how he said, in quote, "you dirty white cracker piece of white trash," and how the Clippers owner is fired for one racist comment when this dirty nigger who creates dirty garbage and filth for the radio goes on and gets no consequences for that. I support you. Thank you for what you do. Goodbye.
Actually, I could care less. Let them tear each other, all these people tear each other to pieces. You got nigger ball. You got corrupt, rotten Jews owning the teams. Their own little plantation, as they say, with their own boys. Snoop Dogg. let them tear each other to pieces. We have nothing to do but gain from it. It just gets more and more people sensitive to the race issue, one way or the other. Here's another POW that has got the wrong idea. Tom Metzger, I'm writing in regards to you. I was brought into war in 2001. Of course, that would have been impossible. And prospect in all. See, these guys are playing around with the war name like it's a motorcycle club or something. There are about 12 to 15 war skins in this unit. I'm at Tacker Max. I wrote you in 2009 and you sent me a newsletter in 2009 called The Insurgent. We at this unit would like to get your newsletter and get on the mailing list, and we'll pay dues for the newsletter. As for us being war skins, we represent the fullest and most fought, bleed, and rode hard for war skins. Thank you for your time. P.S. There are about 250 war skins in Arkansas. I have most of the names, and we're active in our movement. And blank, blank, blank supposedly stated war skin is Arkansas in 1997. Now, there are all of us that is representative in as war skins. It's hard to read his writing. But somebody is doing a number on these guys inside the prison. and recruiting him into something that doesn't exist. Well, I'll have to write another one back and tell him the scoop. Sorry, boys. There's no way someone on the outside of the prisons can run and keep track of something going on inside the prisons. It's ridiculous to even try. Well, I received about a 10-page, closely written letter from George Loeb, who's in prison down in Florida. And he must be feeling better, but these 10-page letters, I was going to read it to you, but it's just too hard to read. But anyhow, he's feeling a lot better because we've been supporting him. And so we'll keep doing that. But I'm not going to read this long letter. It's a good letter. I'll tell him he needs to send us a little shorter letters here. Well, it seems like my lady sometimes flies to see someone in the summer, one of her schoolmates or something like that. But anyhow, she got some frequent flyer miles, and they offered me, I forget how many magazines, for only $2 per year subscription. So I chose about half a dozen of the good, what I figured were the better ones. I'm starting to get them, and I'll resend those off to prisoners. I figure that's a pretty cost-effective way of giving them something and keeping them in the loop, even though, of course, most major magazines are pretty bad, but anyhow, it gives them something. And the same with you. You get magazines that, once you've read them, stick them in a manila envelope and send them to a POW. By the way, did you know that the taxpayers spend $80 billion a year on jails and prisons? And did you know that it costs every adult person in the United States $260 a year to finance all these jails and prisons?
Another one.
Oh, guess what? Guess what? We've got another Negro movie coming out. Yeah, you know that I Was a Slave or something like that. That was a big hit. Of course, they're always big hits when they're pro-black or pro-Jew. Even though it doesn't seem to dribble down to the black on the street, that's for sure. But anyhow, the Jews make lots of money. Well, anyhow, they got a new one coming out. This was called Belle, B-E-L-L. She's somehow related to some big-shot white Commodore ship captain or something, and she gets all involved in politics and everything else. So hold your nose and stand by. Here we go again. Mr. Progressive, hey, give me a little information on that China deal, okay?
Something that was written by Carl Gibson and posted at Reader Supported News a couple days ago. It's entitled China, the Wet Dream of American Oligarchs. He is writing about the kind of capitalism, fascist capitalism, I guess is the proper way I would put it anyway, that exists in China. And he says two crucial new tidbits of information coming out of China are helping to paint a fuller picture of the long-lasting damage from the unrestrained capitalism that's evident in the world's most populous nation. A newly released Chinese state secret document revealed that one-fifth of China's farmland is unusable due to toxins in the soil leaked by industry. And worse still, 60% of China's groundwater is undrinkable for the same reasons. And when you when you think about this, 20% of China's farmland unusable due to toxins. What's the first word that pops into your mind? The first word that pops into my mind is Monsanto. 60% of China's groundwater is undrinkable. The first word or the first thought that pops into my mind is the Keystone XL pipeline or any part of the carbon-based fuel industry. when you combine China's dwindling natural resources with its massive population, and by the way, that population is 20% of everybody on the planet, it is not difficult to see how China will inevitably lead itself to societal collapse if it continues this brand of entirely unregulated capitalism. Now, China is technically known as a communist country, but it's actually outdoing the United States when it comes to establishing a completely unregulated business environment. This is what the Koch brothers want. This is what, not just the Koch brothers, but there's a whole list. The Walton family is another one. Adelson is another one. These predatory capitalists who couldn't care less about whether or not you survive, your family survives, the country survives, the planet survives. It's all about short-term gain. They just don't care.
Okay. We got your point there, Mr. Rogue Progressive. So that sort of flies in the face of this, all this stuff that China is becoming super powerful. Well, it is powerful, but it's got some big super problems. I've been telling you about it for a long time, and yet guys will send me emails, oh my God, we're rushing our whole Navy over there to surround China. No, it's just that the war on terror, the scam war on terror is finally winding down, and they got to make it look like we've got a new enemy. They're trying it with Russia, but it's not working out too good with Russia. But they're sending the carriers and everything and getting them all over there, and they're shipping more troops. Thousands of troops are going to be stationed down in Australia. And I think, for the most part, it's a false flag situation. Just another way to make millions for the military-industrial arms people. And to keep a lot of young men out of the American workforce. World War II did that, too. So when you get all these guys coming at you with, oh, my God, China's coming, well, just tell them to calm down a little bit. Like I told you yesterday, or Max Kaiser told you, they had 50 or 60 top red Chinese capitalists that have been picked off and they're committing suicide, and number 9 man in the Communist Party disappears, and all his hundreds of people and his family are rounded up. You know, China's... I mean, they got 20% of the world population there, and they're running out of water, or at least water they can drink. So you got to take this all into consideration before you go along with these right wingers. Oh, the Chinese are coming. The Chinese are coming. Well, it's time to get to the feature event here before it's too late. I recorded a lecture by a Japanese scientist, and I guess philosopher too, last week, and I think I told you about it, but I'm going to play it for you because I think it's very, very important that you hear it. Now, like anything else, it's like the chickens out in the farm barnyard. There's a whole lot of crap out there and doo-doo, but the chicken's going to peck around until he finds the corn, and that's the way it is to get information, intelligence information, or something that's going to make you a smarter kid. So that's the way it works. So if there's things in here you don't agree with, well, sorry, boys. Don't send me to the woodshed. But I think this is excellent. And also I like the way he tunes in on the tripart brain, because most people still don't get it about the evolution of the tripart brain.
Well, after such a great introduction, I can't wait to hear the speaker myself. Sometimes all these introductions recently, New York Magazine voted me as one of the 100 smartest people in New York City. So I thought, wow, what an honor. But in all fairness, I have to admit that Madonna also made that same list. And I understand that next year, Lady Gaga is going to push me off the list entirely. Now today, I'm going to talk about the future of the mind. And let me say that talking about the future is dangerous. Let me quote from that great philosopher of the Western world, Yogi Berra. Yogi Berra once said, quote, "Prediction is awfully hard to do, especially if it's about the future." Well, I'm a physicist. We can predict the future of the universe billions of years into the future. So let me quote from that other great philosopher, Woody Allen. He once said, quote, "Eternity is an awful long time, especially toward the end." Well, you may say to yourself, what does a physicist know about the mind? What does a physicist know about daily life? Well, we are the ones who invented the transistor. We invented the laser. We helped to assemble the first computer and the internet. We wrote the World Wide Web. And along the way, we invented television. We invented radio, radar, microwaves, X-ray machines. And don't forget, we created the space program and the GPS satellite. And we physicists love to make predictions. When we helped to assemble the internet, one physicist predicted that the internet would become a forum of high culture, high art, and high society. Well, today we know that 5% of the internet is pornography. But that's because teenage boys log on to the internet. Just wait until the grandmas and grandpas log on to the internet. Then 50% of the internet will be pornography. And again, you may say to yourself, well, how does physics differ from chemistry or the other sciences? Well, let me tell you a little story. During World War II, once the Nazis captured a bunch of American scientists, and they called them spies. And so they were about to be executed by firing squad. There was a geologist, a physicist, and a chemist about to be shot by the firing squad by the Nazis. Well, they lined them all up. And then, just as they were about to push the trigger, all of a sudden, the geologist says, "Earthquake! Earthquake!" Well, chaos broke out. And then, in the chaos, the geologist snuck away. Well, now it was just the physicist and the chemist. They were lined up in the firing squad. And then suddenly the physicist said, "Lightning! Lightning!" Well, in the chaos, the physicist sneaks away. Now it's just the chemist. So they line up the rifles. And all of a sudden the chemist says, "Fire! Fire!" Sometimes it just doesn't pay. So anyway, today I'm going to talk about the future of the mind. Ever since I was a child, I've been fascinated by two things. First, I've been fascinated by outer space, by the origin of the universe. In fact, that's what I do for a living. That's my day job. However, I've also been fascinated by inner space. What lurks on your shoulders? It's the most complex object in the known universe. If we were to create a computer that can simulate the brain, the computer would be the size of a city block. That's how big the computer would be. Energy would require a nuclear power plant to fire it up and a river to cool it down. But your brain operates on 20 watts of power. So when someone calls you a dim bulb, that's a compliment. And you don't need a nuclear power plant to energize your brain. Just a hamburger is fine. So how is it possible? Well, my latest book, The Future of the Mind, I'm proud to say, is now number one on the New York Times bestseller list. So, I'm not the only one fascinated by the mind, because the book is now the number one hardcover book in the United States. But my previous book was also a bestseller, Physics of the Future. In fact, they tell me this is the first time in world history that the word physics entered the New York Times bestseller list. And I did it twice. In Physics of the Impossible, I even go 500 years into the future, when we have starships, teleportation, maybe even time travel. And I answer the question, what happens if you go into a time machine, go back in time to meet your teenage mother before you're born, and she falls in love with you? Well, if your teenage mother falls in love with you before you're born, you're in deep doo-doo if that happens. So let us talk about the two greatest mysteries in the universe. The origin of the universe and what's sitting on your shoulders. Inner space and outer space. And last year, the politicians got wind of the excitement. We've learned more in the last 5 to 10 years about the mind than in all of human history combined. President Barack Obama last year got wind of this and in his State of the Union address announced the Brain Initiative. Just like the Human Genome Project changed the course of medicine, giving us a disc with all our genes on it, Obama announced the Brain Initiative with the Europeans. $1 billion, that's billion with a B, not an M, will be devoted to creating a map of the brain. Just think of it. We will have the genome and the connectome, all the neural connections of the mind on a disc. The short-term goal is to cure mental illness. Mental illness has been with us since biblical times. Even the Bible mentions mental illness. But if we have the connectome and we have the genome on two discs, then in some sense, if you die, you live forever. You live forever in some sense because your personality, your memories, your wants and desires are coded inside a disc. So when I was a kid, I was fascinated by telepathy, reading minds, telekinesis, moving objects with the mind, recording memories, uploading memories, photographing a dream. Believe it or not, we can do all of the above. And you will see that in today's slideshow. But when I was a kid, I used to try to read people's minds. I tried real hard to move objects with the mind. I finally came to the conclusion that maybe there are true telepaths that walk the surface of the earth, but I wasn't one of them. And then in science fiction, of course, it's full of telepaths. These are things that we can now do in the laboratory. Things that we can only dream of, we now do in the laboratory. And even recording memories and uploading them. Hollywood is always ahead of us. This is the movie The Matrix. When even reality itself is a memory uploaded into the mind. So let me ask you a question. Late at night, just before you go to sleep, late at night, have you ever had that weird sensation that maybe life is an illusion? Maybe it's just a memory uploaded into your mind like the Matrix, and you are the only one that's real. And in some sense, someone is testing you to see whether you're smart enough to figure out that you're the only real one. Ever had that weird feeling? Raise your hand if you ever had that feeling. Well, you're crazy. You think you're the only one in the universe? Give me a break. You see, I'm the only one in the universe. I'm sitting in my bed right now. This is just a memory uploaded into my mind. I'm just sitting in my bed all by myself. Well, Hollywood, of course, is always ahead of us. And when it comes to uploading memories, no one can do it better than the former governor of California. The former governor of California had the memory of being married to Sharon Stone uploaded into his mind. And look what happened to him. This is Total Recall. And in Total Recall, Arnold Schwarzenegger is the good guy. For 99% of the movie, he's the good guy. You identify with him. He's the hero. And in the last minutes of the film, you find out he's actually the bad guy with good guy memories uploaded. It's the only movie I know where he's both the hero and the villain simultaneously. And then we have Iron Man comics and the movies, exoskeletons. We can now do this in the laboratory. In fact, the Pentagon realized that there are thousands of wounded warriors from Iraq and Afghanistan. They are now connecting the brain directly to a mechanical arm and exoskeleton, bypassing the spinal cord totally. We can now do this in the laboratory. And then, why not live our life through an avatar, a surrogate? Surrogates have perfect bodies. They're superhuman in strength. They're perfect. They're gorgeous. Why not live our life through a surrogate or an avatar? This could be the future of the space program. Outer space is dangerous. Ever see the movie with Sandra Bullock, Gravity? Whoa. Space is dangerous. So why not send a robot into outer space guided by you, and you are in your hot tub in your living room. From your hot tub, you mentally control a robot astronaut in outer space. NASA is looking into this possibility. And then I used to dream about telekinesis, moving objects with mind. This is the movie Carrie, where a telekinetic is bullied all her life, and finally she can't take it anymore. So at the senior prom, she destroys the entire high school. What's the lesson here? The lesson here is never take a telekinetic to the senior prom. And then Superman, the iconic figure of the comic books. Hollywood is right there again. Every kid knows that Superman's father died when Krypton blew up. But the latest movie has a twist. You see, in the latest movie, Superman's father is reduced to a computer program. His connectome, his mind, his pathways of the brain are encoded in a computer program. And he comes back to life as Russell Crowe. Russell Crowe is a hologram that has all the memories, personality quirks, all the expressions of Superman's father. Is this possible? This could be the end product of President Barack Obama's Brain Initiative. We will have a disc called Brain 2.0. Brain 2.0 that lives on even after we die. And then the question is, can the mind exist without the body? 200, 300 years ago, people thought that the spirit, the soul, was different from flesh and blood. Then we have modern science, which tells us, no. You see, the brain is wetware, like hardware. The brain is computer wetware, and the mind is software. The mind is software running on wetware. But, you see, if we can put the mind on a disc called the connectome, this billion-dollar project of President Barack Obama, then in some sense, the mind can be separate from the body, just as the ancients once thought. But let's talk about science. That was Hollywood. Now let's talk about science. Because of physics, we can now peer right into the thinking process of the mind. With MRI scans, we can actually see thoughts ricocheting across the mind like a ping pong ball. We can actually see mental illness in action. This is a brain scan. On the left is the brain when you tell the truth. The red areas represent blood flow, which is very easy to measure with an MRI scan. When you tell the truth, nothing happens. But when you tell a lie, when you tell a lie. First, you have to know the truth. Then you have to create the lie. Then you have to calculate the consistency of the lie with all the other lies you've been telling all these years. That's a lot of brain power. Your brain lights up like a Christmas tree. And now, if you take a look at the brain, look at it from the point of view of evolution. Our brain is like a museum. Look at the back. The back part of the brain is the most ancient part of the brain. It's called the reptilian brain. When you are in a car accident and you get whiplash back here, sometimes you lose your sense of balance. Because what's back here is the most ancient part of the brain, the reptilian brain. Then in the middle is the monkey brain, the brain of emotions, the brain of social hierarchy, hunting in a pack, forming coalitions, understanding the intentions of other people. That's the center of the brain. Then the front of the brain is the thinking brain. That is the brain of humans. Now that we have brain scans, we can test old wives' tales to see whether these old wives' tales about the mind are true or not. For example, many parents, when they look at their teenage children, are thoroughly convinced that teenagers are brain damaged. Yes, teenagers are brain damaged. You can actually see that with brain scans. It's amazing. The prefrontal lobe is not fully formed in teenagers. So the next time you argue with your teenagers, you know he's brain damaged. Okay? Another old wives' tale is that when a man talks to a pretty girl, he starts to act stupid. Well, it's true. You look at a brain scan of a man talking to a pretty girl and blood drains from the prefrontal cortex. Men act retarded, stupid. It's absolutely true. You can see that with brain scans. So old wives' tales can now be tested against science. And then, if you were to cut the brain horizontally, you have two hemispheres on the left and the right hemispheres, and different parts of the mind are connected to different parts of the body. If you electrify this part of the brain, it doesn't hurt at all. The brain has no pain sensors. The brain cannot feel pain. If you hit this part of the brain with an electrode, then your opposite hand moves. You hit this with electricity, then this part of your hand moves. Now, it turns out that in epileptics, we have to cut the connection between the left and the right hemispheres. And then something bizarre, something mysterious begins to happen. When you cut the connection between the left and the right hemispheres, gradually two personalities begin to emerge. Two different minds in the same brain begin to emerge. We see this. All of a sudden, you want to do one thing with your hand, and then your other hand goes like this. Okay? In one documented case, one half of the brain was an atheist. The other half of the brain was a believer. Now, in the future, I'm sure that we're going to find a brain such that one half is Republican. And the other half is Democrat. And can you imagine going to the polling booth and they have to hit the switch and all of a sudden there's this struggle. There's a struggle between the left and the right over pulling down the switch. Yes, this could actually happen because we now have brain scans, not just superstitions about the mind. Now, in the old days, back in the 1950s, you had to put on this awkward helmet. You look like a refugee from Star Trek. All these electrodes. Now, we don't do that anymore because we have computers. Computers allow us to decipher all this mishmash of radio that comes out of the mind. In fact, in the future, these brain scans will be sexy. On the upper left, children can now play video games mentally. They put on a headband. The headband picks up radio from their mind, and they control an avatar inside a video game. On the right is what is happening in Japan. In Japan, you put a headband on your head at a party, and it has two ears on it. When you talk to someone who's interesting, the ears go like this. When you talk to a dud, a real loser, then your ears go, like that. And so with this headset, you will know ahead of time if you're going to go home alone at night. And I think I'm going to give these to my students in college. I will see all my students. If their ears go like, then I will say F, F, F. Oh, there's an A here. There's another A. Okay? So you can do this now. This has gotten the attention now of Apple computers and Microsoft. They're looking into this. On the lower left, maybe one day you will simply control your laptop by thinking. The headset will pick up radio from the brain. Computers will decipher the signal and move the cursor. You can already type. We can already type by the power of the mind because computers can now decipher what you are thinking about. And one day it could be sexy. All of a sudden, fashion models, people that are at the forefront of high fashion, will start to wear these things as well. It'll be fashionable to control computers this way. In fact, in the future, one day, when you walk into a room, you may mentally turn on the lights, mentally set the thermostat, mentally turn on the TV, mentally call for the car, and mentally drive the car just by thinking about it. This is my colleague, Stephen Hawking, the great cosmologist. He's now lost control of his fingers. He can only blink. That's all he can do. But no, we're physicists. What we did was we put a chip in his right glass. Next time you see Stephen on television, look at his right frame. There is a chip in his glass. That chip picks up radio from his brain, converts it to signals that operate a laptop computer. So this is how Stephen now communicates with the world. But not just a laptop. Why not an exoskeleton? This is what's being done at Brown University, Duke University. They put a chip right on top of the brain. It doesn't hurt because the brain doesn't have any pain sensors. Then this chip is connected to a laptop, which then controls a wheelchair. This gentleman here had a stroke. He is a vegetable. He cannot scratch his nose. He cannot talk. He cannot do anything but blink. Blink is the only thing he can do. At Brown, they put a chip in his brain, connected to a computer. He can now surf the web. He can read email, write email, play video games, do crossword puzzles, operate his wheelchair, operate household appliances. Anything you can do on a computer, he can also do, and he is totally paralyzed. And we've now connected, also at Brown University, this paralyzed woman to a mechanical arm. She also is totally paralyzed. She can only blink. And when they connected her to a mechanical arm, she could pick up Coca-Cola for the first time in years and scratch her nose. And they asked her, how do you feel? And she blinked, and she blinked, and she spelled out the words, I want robot legs next. Well, that's coming too. Because the Pentagon got wind of this. And they realized, oh my God, think of all the wounded warriors from Iraq and Afghanistan with no arms, no legs. What is our country doing for our veterans? Well, what we're doing is creating mechanical arms. Mechanical arms that are so sensitive, you can pick up an egg without breaking it. You can fist bump. You can high five. You can handshake. That is how delicate these arms are, built at Johns Hopkins University. And not only that, but
complete exoskeletons are next. We are going to bypass the spinal cord for these people. Think of the people who are injured because of car accidents, strokes, football accidents on the football field. Hundreds of them, thousands of people who are partially or fully paralyzed. We're going to make sure they walk again by bypassing the spinal cord. Now, at Duke University, there's one scientist from Brazil. He's creating this exoskeleton for somebody who is totally paralyzed so that he can start the World Cup soccer games in Brazil. So the next time you watch the International Soccer Cup games in Brazil, they will be initiated by somebody who is a vegetable, totally paralyzed with an exoskeleton. And in Japan, they're looking at surrogates, avatars, like the movie avatars. In the movie Avatar, you are in a pod, and you control mentally another being. This is now Japan, where we have a robot connected to a man with electrodes, and he controls the robot. This could be the future of police work, firemen, emergency work. People put their lives on the line for dangerous jobs. Why not have a robot do it? And it could also be the future of education. Surrogates will one day be in the classroom. This is a surrogate. It shows the picture of somebody who is sick in bed. The teacher looks at the surrogate and sees the face of the pupil who is sick in bed. And the pupil in turn sees an image of the teacher while the student is sick. Remember when we were young? We used to play hooky. Those were the good old days, right? They're gone. Isn't the future wonderful? We'll never be able to play hooky again because the teacher always knows every single day there's the surrogate right there in that chair. And the brain is connected to the eyes, so why not use the eyes as a direct way to input information into the brain? This is the future of the Internet. The future of the Internet is to be in your contact lens. You blink, and you go online. And who are the first people to buy Internet contact lenses? College students taking final examinations. My students will blink, and they will see all the answers to my exam right there in front of them. And who's the second person to buy Internet contact lenses? President Barack Obama. So he doesn't have to have these damn teleprompters giving his speech whenever he gives a speech. Who's the third person to get Internet contact lenses? Vice President Joe Biden. So he never says anything goofy again. And Valentine's Day. Think of all the Romeos who are tongue-tied. They can't say roses are red, violets are blue. Think of all the Romeos who can't get a poem off the ground for their loved one. In the future, all the tongue-tied Romeos will have beautiful words emanating from their mouth right out of a poetry book, because it is right outside of a poetry book. NASA is interested in this because astronauts are not in space. They have to see the blueprint. They're in outer space, for God's sake. And there's no blueprint. They'll see the blueprint right there in your eyes. These contact lenses, by the way, will also recognize people's faces. So when you bump into somebody, you'll always know who they are. How many times have you been at a conference like this and you bump into somebody and you say, I know this person. I know that it's Jim, John, Jake. Who is this person? In the future, your contact lens will say, it's Jim, stupid. You want to see his complete biography next to his name? You see him every time there's a meeting here at Rainy Day Books. And let's say you're looking for a job. You're at a cocktail party. And you know there's some very important people at that cocktail party, but you don't know who they are. In the future, you will know exactly who to suck up to at any cocktail party. Husband and wives will connect their contact lenses together. How many times has the husband or the wife gone shopping and bought the wrong thing. Go back and return that apple. The apple is rotten. In the future, you'll see what your husband or wife is saying, and you'll say, no, 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 don't buy that apple. No, 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 buy this instead. And so, surrogates will repair damaged reactors, like in Fukushima, put out fires, explore outer space, and you will be in a hot tub, mentally controlling all these gadgets. So, computerized prosthetics could enhance the human body. And next is uploading memories. This was once considered science fiction, but now we do it. Last year, at Wake Forest University in North Carolina, and also in Los Angeles, they took a mouse, trained the mouse to drink water from a bottle, and then they recorded the memory in the hippocampus. The hippocampus is that red thing in the middle of the brain. They recorded that memory. Later, the mouse forgot. But then they reinserted the tape recorder back into the hippocampus. And bingo, the mouse remembered. This is the first time in world history, just last year, that we recorded a memory and played it back, uploaded that memory into a mouse. Next, primates. Very soon now, we're going to record memories of a monkey, perhaps eating a banana. Record it, and then shoot it back in. And the monkey will remember everything that it forgot. Next, Alzheimer's patients. We are going to create a brain pacemaker for Alzheimer's patients. That's the short-term goal. We're going to create a button. You push the button, and the memory of who you are, who your children are, where you left your keys, will be inserted back into your mind. And who knows, even beyond that, maybe you'll push a button and you'll insert the memory of a vacation that you never had. Or if you're a college student, think of all the courses you flunked in college. Maybe we'll be able to upload some of that information. And workers who get laid off because of technology, maybe they'll upgrade their skills, not by going to a community college, but by simply uploading the memory. So the hippocampus is the gateway to memory. Now, when the hippocampus is damaged, like in a stroke, then you cannot form long-term memories. There's a sad case of a guy named Mr. Malayason. His hippocampus is damaged in surgery. When you greet him, he would say, hello, hello, how are you, how are you? And then he would forget. He would forget that he met you and start all over again. Hello, hello, how are you? And he would do this for decades. For decades, he would repeat the same memory over and over again. Late in life, he saw himself in a mirror, and he was shocked to see an old man in the mirror. And he said, that can't be me. I'm a young man. I'm young. And then he would forget the memory of seeing himself as an old man. And he'd go back to saying, hello, hello, how are you? This is so bizarre that two Hollywood movies were created about him. One is 51st Dates with Drew Barrymore, and the other one is Groundhog Day with Bill Murray. And then the question is, can you photograph a thought? Now, normally you would say, ha! What's more ephemeral, fleeting, than a thought? Well, at Berkeley, where I got my PhD years ago, we can actually do it. You put somebody in a brain scan. The brain scan converts the image of your mind into 30,000 dots. Now, that's an MRI machine today. Very awkward. You can't brain scan yourself every day. But on the right is the world's smallest MRI machine. It's only this big. It uses supercomputers to compensate for a weak magnetic field. And according to the laws of physics, how small can you make a huge MRI machine? The answer is, according to the laws of physics, we can make an MRI machine this big. Your cell phone will have more computer power than a university hospital today. Your medicine cabinet will have more medical knowledge than a university hospital today. So here's how we do it. We take the brain, put it in an MRI scan, and the computer spits out 30,000 dots. Each dot represents electrical activity of the brain. Then a software program analyzes these 30,000 dots and prints out a picture. These are some of the first pictures of a thought. On the left is Steve Martin. This, next to it, is the image of Steve Martin as seen through your brain. It's not perfect, because it's only 30,000 dots. A picture may have a million pixels. But, hey, the fact that we can do this at all is amazing. This is a picture of an elephant, a person, and an airplane. And then the computer image generated by a computer. Then what you do is you put this person in an MRI machine and you have him go to sleep. And when he sleeps, he dreams. And the computer program just keeps on going. Some of the first crude pictures of a dream came out last year. In the future, you may wake up, push a button, and see the dream that you had the previous night. And then in Germany, they did something amazing. According to old wives' tale, some of us have lucid dreaming abilities. We are conscious when we dream. We can actually change the course of a dream. We know we are dreaming while we are dreaming. This is called lucid dreaming. Now, how many people in this audience have ever experienced any dream, even once, where you knew you were dreaming? Look at that. Well, it turns out that this old wives' tale is true. In Germany, at the Max Planck Institute last year, they brain scanned a lucid dreamer and he controlled the direction of his dream and we followed it with an MRI scan. It is absolutely true. So maybe one day, Leonardo DiCaprio's movie Inception is not so far-fetched after all. And then, the big one, mental illness. This is why President Barack Obama and the European Union want to dump $1 billion to find out how the brain is miswired. It turns out, for example, that many of our leading figures, actors, actresses, composers, musicians, have suffered from bipolar disorder. On the upper left, for example, is Margot Kidder. She became famous as Lois Lane. However, several years ago, they found her homeless, stark naked, hiding behind garbage cans. And it was revealed that she suffers from bipolar disorder, as many actresses and famous actors suffer. We can now brain scan these people, and we now cannot cure them, but we understand how mental illness forms to a degree. Schizophrenics, for example, hear voices. If you want to see a schizophrenic, just go downtown. See the homeless, and you'll see people talking to themselves. That is classic schizophrenia. And when you brain scan these people, you find something very interesting. The left part of your brain generates voices. You talk to yourself. We all talk to ourselves all the time. But the front part of your brain, the conscious brain, is aware of it. In these people, when they have voices racing through their mind, the left part of their brain lights up, but the front part of the brain is unaware of it. In other words, they are talking to themselves without their permission or their knowledge. Now, if you one day heard a voice inside your brain that was outside of your conscious control, you'd think you're going crazy, right? Well, that's what we have here. We can actually see that now in these people. And we can now even go into history. Joan of Arc was perhaps one of the most legendary figures in all of ancient history. A teenager who changes the course of a war, changes the course of European history, because she said she talked to God. We're not sure, but it turns out that if you have epileptic lesions in your brain, some of them, about 10-20%, become hyper-religious. You see ghosts, demons everywhere. And we think that perhaps the prophets of old, got hit on the head, and they began to see ghosts, demons everywhere. And we think Joan of Arc suffered from this. And you can actually induce this artificially. You could put on a helmet that shoots radio, duplicating this effect, and you feel that you're in the presence of God. This is called a God helmet, where you put on a helmet and you feel that you're in the presence of God. So, scientists, being scientists, decided to put a nun and an atheist inside the God helmet to see whether you can change their beliefs. For the atheist, they chose Richard Dawkins. So Richard Dawkins, the atheist biologist, he put on the helmet, and then a nun put on the helmet, and they asked, did this change your religious beliefs? And Richard Dawkins says, no, he's still an atheist. And they asked the nun, does this change your belief, the fact you can induce religious feelings? And she said, no. You see, God created us with a telephone. A telephone in our brain so that we can communicate with God. So the scientists were unable to change anyone's religious beliefs. Some days you can't win. And then the question is, what about super genius? What about people who are off scale, have fantastic photographic memory, artistic and mathematical abilities? It turns out that there was a boy who had a bullet go through the left temporal lobe. There was a man who dove into a swimming pool, hit the left side of his head on the bottom of the pool, and afterwards, both of them became super mathematical geniuses. This has now been documented. Acquired savant behavior. Now tonight, after today's talk, do not pick up a hammer. And do not hit yourself on the left temporal lobe, thinking you're going to become a genius afterwards. However, some of these people have photographic memories that we have analyzed. This gentleman here, for example, takes a helicopter ride over Manhattan and draws the entire vista of the Manhattan Harbor, the New York Harbor, from memory. He did it for Hong Kong, London, and New York City. When you go to JFK Airport and you land in the American Airlines terminal, look up and you will see. You will see this huge mural, every detail perfect, drawn from memory by this man who had one helicopter ride over Manhattan. How do you do this? If they can do it, we can do it. We're not that different from these people. So how is it? Well, we're not sure. But one theory is that when you have a memory, we used to think that the memory decays with time. It gets old. It wears out and disappears. We don't think that anymore. We now believe that forgetting is a very complicated biochemical process. In these people, their brain records, but the forgetting mechanism is broken. They have forgotten how to forget. Therefore, they remember everything. You can ask them, what were you doing in 1954 at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on May 2nd? And they will tell you what they were doing at that time. Amazing. And then we have the other question of Asperger's syndrome. True genius from Isaac Newton. Isaac Newton, hands down, is the greatest scientist who ever lived. Einstein said that. And he was a very strange person. He couldn't have small talk. He couldn't chit-chat with you. He'd be horrible at a dinner conversation. You would not want to invite Isaac Newton for dinner. And if you want to see somebody with Asperger's syndrome, just watch The Big Bang Theory on CBS television. Asperger's people are strange. They don't make eye contact. They're klutzy with conversations. They're clueless when it comes to women, just like on The Big Bang Theory. But yet, some of the greatest Nobel Prize winners, like Paul Dirac, suffered from Asperger's syndrome. And then there is true genius of modern times, Albert Einstein. Did you know that we have Einstein's brain? When Einstein died in 1955, the doctor who did the autopsy kidnapped the brain. Without anyone's permission, he took the brain home and kept it in a cooler for 30 years. It was sitting in his living room underneath some books for 30 years. One day he drove across country and put Einstein's brain in a mayonnaise jar. Einstein's brain went through a lot of problems over decades because this man said, this is a piece of history and he cannot cremate it. And he took it home, but he didn't know what to do with it. Now it's at Princeton University, and in my book I even have a chapter analyzing the greatest brain of modern times. But what about Sigmund Freud? Well, believe it or not, we can now reanalyze Sigmund Freudian psychology from a modern point of view. Sigmund Freud, many people think he was a crackpot. Crazy. Superego, id, unconscious mind. How do you measure those things? Now we can. With brain scans, you can actually see that there is a pleasure center at the center of the brain. There is a libido, a part of the brain that governs pleasure, just like Freud said. In fact, if you take a mouse and hook electrodes to the nucleus accumbens, the pleasure center, and hook the electrodes to a telegraph key, the mouse will hit the telegraph key twice a second until it starves to death. So they went to dogs, cats, and even up to a dolphin. They hooked a dolphin up to the pleasure center so that when a dolphin swam forward, it would hit an electrode to stimulate its pleasure center. Well, the dolphin would hit the electrode twice a second until the dolphin realized, I am dying. I will die. I am starving to death. Then the dolphin stopped, went out, grabbed some food, and came back and hit himself again. Dolphin's not stupid after all. And then the question is, what is consciousness? You know, so many people have written about this thing called consciousness. 20,000 papers have been written about consciousness. Never in the history of science have so many written so much to produce so little. I have a new theory of consciousness that I put in the book. I don't have time to get into it, but I believe that animals have consciousness. Our consciousness is different from animals. But yes, even dogs, cats, I think, are conscious. And in fact, how many people here in this room have a cat at home, right? Raise your hand. Now, when you come home, right, the cat comes up to you and purrs and goes right up to your leg. And you say, oh, kind putty cat, that's a nice cat. How affectionate, right? Wrong. If you were to scan the brain of the cat would be thinking, this human is mine. I own this human. I'm going to put my hormone on this human's leg so other cats cannot come on my territory. In fact, I trained this human. This human feeds me twice a day. Good human. Good human. Okay? That's what's going on in the cat's consciousness. And why are cats loners? Why do they come up to you and purr next to you and then disappear all by themselves? Because they're descended from the wildcat. The wildcat is a solitary hunter. They do not hunt in packs at all. They're used to being alone, just like Greta Garbo. They want to be alone. Now, how many people in this room have a dog? Raise your hand. Oh, wow, even more. Well, when you come home, the dog jumps at you and slobbers all over you. Why? Because the dog thinks that you are a dog. Except you are top dog. You're the alpha dog. They are the underdog. Because dogs are pack animals. They hunt in groups. There's a pecking order. A very rigid pecking order. Who eats first? The alpha male. Who eats last? The delta male. And that's why dogs are, quote, man's best friend. Because they actually think that you are a dog. And why do dogs like to be with people? Because they're pack animals. They like to hunt in groups. I think, however, that the lowest state of consciousness is a thermostat. One unit of feedback. That's what I call one unit of consciousness. Even thermostats, I believe, are conscious. The unit of consciousness is a thermostat. A flower has maybe 10 units. It registers water, sunlight, gravity, moisture, carbon dioxide. So a flower may have 10 units of consciousness. And then, as I said before, the back of your brain is the reptilian brain. It understands space. It knows where it is located. It knows where the prey is, but not much more. So that's level one consciousness, space. It understands its location in space. Then level two consciousness, monkey consciousness, the monkey brain located at the center of your brain. This is the brain of emotions, the brain of social hierarchies, the brain of pecking orders. And then level three, what makes us different? We see the future. Animals do not. Animals have no conception of tomorrow. They don't plan for tomorrow. When it gets cold, they hibernate because it's instinctive. When it gets cold, we pack our bags, we winterize our home, we fret about, you know, all sorts of things. We see the future. We daydream. We plan. Strategize. Animals don't. Animals have no conception of time. That is, no conception of tomorrow. Now, if this theory is correct, I have to explain everything about the mind, including things as ephemeral as humor. You may say to yourself, humor is so spiritual, so much out there that you'll never be able to explain it in a theory of consciousness. I don't think so. Why is a joke funny? A joke is funny because you hear something and then you complete the ending. Your brain is a prediction machine. It constantly predicts the ending. You have no choice. So when you hear a joke, your brain completes the ending. And then when you hear the actual ending, it's different. And then you laugh. And that's why things are funny. For example, let me give you an example. Teddy Roosevelt's daughter was one of the gossip mongers of the White House. She loved gossip. And she's famous for saying, quote, "If you have nothing good to say about other people, then please come sit next to me." W.C. Fields was asked a question about young people, educating young people. And he was asked the question, "Are you in favor of clubs for young people?" And W.C. Fields says, "Am I in favor of clubs for young people? Yes, but only if kindness fails." And then the Bible says, the Bible says, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, except do it first." Now, why are these quotes funny? Because when you hear the expression that your mother taught you, that if you don't have anything nice to say about somebody, then don't say anything at all, right? You complete the dots. You have no choice. Your brain is a prediction machine. But then when the punchline is, "Then come sit next to me," it's funny because you didn't expect that. So I say that even humor can be understood in my theory of consciousness. Now, we're running out of time, so I'll skip the discussion of robots, other than to say that robots are level one. Robots are like alligators. They're not much more intelligent than alligators. Slowly, we're beginning to create emotional robots, but robots today are still pretty stupid. The most advanced robot is built in Japan. Asimo, you saw a picture of him earlier. Asimo can run, walk like a little boy, climb up stairs. Asimo, the world's most advanced robot, can even dance. In fact, he dances much better than me. I did a number of TV specials with Asimo. He dances better than me every time. So I interviewed for BBC the creator of the world's most advanced robot. And I asked the inventor, how smart is the world's most advanced robot? And he said, on camera, he said, "Asimo, my creation, is as smart as a cockroach, a retarded cockroach, a lobotomized, stupid, retarded cockroach. We have a long ways to go before robots become smarter than us. And let me wind up by saying that, yes, President Barack Obama has this brain initiative to create Brain 2.0, a copy of the brain, to understand why it's miswired. Why do we have mental illness? But if we can understand the wiring of the brain, then perhaps we will also have a form of immortality. Then the question is, when you die, do you live forever? Well, to paraphrase Bill Clinton, it all depends on how you define the word you. Are you wetware and software? If so, that when you die, you die. Or are you information? If so, then information can double every 18 months. This is Moore's Law. This is the rate at which computers are growing in sophistication. For example, when you get a birthday card in the mail, you open it up and it sings. It sings, happy birthday to you. There's a chip in that birthday card. That chip, according to this chart, has more computer power than all the Allied forces of 1945. Hitler, Churchill, Roosevelt would have killed to get that chip. And what do you do with it? You throw it away in the garbage. If Hitler had that chip in 1940, we might all be speaking German here today rather than English. And then look at 1969. In 1969, we put two men on the moon. But ever see these old grainy NASA tapes of mission control? My God, according to this chart, they were 64K processors. Dinosaurs! Your cell phone today has more computer power than all of NASA in 1969. In fact, you're not going to put me on one of those rocket ships. You're not going to send me into outer space backed up by one cell phone. It's criminal. It's criminal. We were shooting humans into outer space backed up by one cell phone. And the internet, as a consequence, will become a brain net. We will send emotions, memories through the internet. Can you imagine teenagers? Can you imagine teenagers on Facebook sending the emotions, the experience of their first date, the senior prom, all of it on the internet? They'll go crazy. The movies could have total immersion entertainment. Not just a flat screen with sound, that's the movies of today, but total internal, total emotional content. And perhaps in the far future, now we're talking the next century, if we have the connectome, a disc with your memories, your thoughts on it, perhaps we can send it into outer space. In fact, we can send it on the laser beams at the speed of light. This may be the way to explore the galaxy, to send our connectome into outer space at the speed of light on a laser beam to explore the universe. So now, let me close on a note, and then I'll take some questions from the audience, and then I'll sign your books. And just remember, after I sign your books, you can go to eBay and make money and auction them off. But let me end on one last note. When I was a child, I had a role model. And I idolized Albert Einstein. And my favorite Einstein story is this. When Einstein was an old man, he was tired of giving the same talk over and over again. So one day, his chauffeur came up to him. And the chauffeur said, "Professor, I'm really a part-time actor. I've heard your speech so many times, I've memorized it. So why don't we switch places? I will put on a mustache. I will put on a wig. I will be the great Einstein. And you can take a rest and be my chauffeur." Well, Einstein loved the joke, so they switched places. This went along famously until one day, a mathematician in the back asked a very difficult question. And Einstein thought, oh, the game is up. But then the chauffeur said, "That question is so elementary that even my chauffeur here can answer it for you." Thank you very much. It's been a great audience. I'll take questions from the audience. And then I'd be happy to sign your book.
Well, there you go. I think that's a really fantastic lecture. A lot of information there. And I've studied on and off about the subconscious, conscious, and superconscious of the brain. And I've thought for a long time that superconscious was in fact what people mistakenly think is an exterior God. That superconsciousness in your mind is the highest level of your thinking. And that is where the God thing's at. So what do you say? Who's God? Well, we're all gods. How about that? But I can assure you, my God's better than your God. That's it for today. I'll be back on Moonsday. I'll take a break tomorrow and contemplate my navel. Okay, 14:5.
Open your mind.